Hey, Mujer, it's Micaela, host of the Fearless Mujer podcast. What is the Fearless Mujer? It is a space for the mujer who ever felt rejected, misunderstood, and without a seat at the table. If you are ready to renew your mindset, let go of old versions that no longer serve you, and you're ready to be inspired to fearlessly pursue the dreams on your heart, then I invite you for a virtual cup of cafecito. You can listen to the Fearless Mujer on Spotify, Apple, iHeartRadio, and wherever you podcast.
Hello, Scaredy Cats. How are you guys doing today? We hope you all are having a great day so far. Welcome to another episode of the Scaredy Cats podcast. If you guys are new here and are interested in true crime, scary stories, and more, make sure to add us to your favorites and tune in every Wednesday for a brand new episode.
And also, don't forget to follow the podcast on all social media platforms for daily content, or if you want to interact with us and suggest any stories you'd like to hear us talk about in any upcoming episodes. With all that being said, before we jump into today's episode, I do want to mention a disclaimer. Some of the things we say may be unsettling, so if it is a little too much, don't worry. You're welcome to join us next Wednesday for another episode.
Yes, guys, and we're gonna jump right into it. So with that being said, you may be familiar with this story. It's been told many times, but today we would like for you to join us Scaredy Cats as we tell the story in our own words about the mysterious disappearance of Michael Rockefeller. Was it cannibalism that killed him? Did he drown, or was he attacked by a crocodile? Well, let's go ahead and start from the very beginning, starting with who Michael Rockefeller truly was.
So guys, Michael was actually the fifth child in his family. His parents were Nelson Rockefeller, who was the governor of New York, as well as the former U.S. vice president, and Mary Clark, who was his mother. Michael was an exceptional varsity wrestler, and he graduated from Harvard University. He came from a wealthy family of entrepreneurs, however, he had a passion for art. He also served in the army as a private for over 6 months. So, as you guys can tell, he was a very educated and driven person, and after the army, he went on to an expedition for the Harvard Museum to study a tribe. He was compassionate about this tribe, and he admired who they were. He even wrote in his journal how he enjoyed their way of living. And these people who he spoke highly about were the Azmat people, which translate to tree people. And hopefully I'm saying that right. The Azmat tribe, but they were translated to be tree people. Their culture typically depends on trees, whether it be for their food or shelter, their survival. There are almost anything you can think of. And he filmed this tribe, and the footage of this is so beautiful, guys. And like, if you're interested in this after this episode, I would definitely recommend taking a look at it if you haven't seen it yet, because like, it's crazy. Like, a lot of their art, like they have even wood pieces, and you know how like, they have it in their lips and stuff like that. They have it like that, like earrings and like these crazy sculptures they would build. They even built like canoes and stuff. So it was just insane what they could do. Yeah.
And didn't you find out something new while we were researching this?
Yeah. So before we get further into this, guys, as we had mentioned, he came from a family of wealth, guys. I just connected two and two barely right now for this episode. So his last name's Rockefeller, and there's the Rockefeller Center in New York. So if you guys aren't familiar with that, that's where it is. I didn't know that. I think it's his great grandfather that was the one who ended up creating the Rockefeller Center, and that's his great grandpa. So like, obviously, like this family's loaded, guys. Like, they have that. His other, you know, great grandpa was, I think, was the owner of an oil company, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think that's what I saw. And so then his dad was like the U.S. vice president, and he was a governor of New York. So yeah, like they were a wealthy family, which was insane.
Yeah, guys, it's crazy. But this tribe completely captivated Michael, and in his journal he said that the main thing that fascinated him the most was their art of wood and, you know, carvings. He would later begin collecting pieces of the Azmat art, and he even said that he wanted to create an exhibit dedicated to the Azmat tribe showing their creations. As he started to observe the tribe, he noticed that the rowers would row with little efforts, allowing the current to take them throughout the tides. He would travel in between the 13 Azmat territories with missionaries and anthropologists, often to get to know them more. He would spend days in each location gathering possessions to bring back for the museum. However, sadly, on November 19, 1961, this would be the last time Michael was in contact with his friends on this exhibition. The last people he was seen with were the two native guides and the anthropologist Renee Walsing.
Yeah, guys, and just the day before, which would be November 18th, they planned this trip up the coast to collect carvings. He was warned about the dangers of this trip, especially with the unpredictable currents. They traveled on a makeshift catamaran, which only had a single motor. And it's crazy too, guys, because if you look up this picture on the internet, it's like this little boat, and it has like a little hood kind of deal and like a little covering of it. So honestly, like traveling through currents like that in a boat like that, I would be like, like terrified.
Yeah, I would. Sounds scary.
Yeah, but sadly, the boat ended up capsizing, leaving the native guides to swim for help while Rockefeller and Renee held onto the boat as they continued to go adrift. And they did warn him about the currents, you know. Mm-hmm. So I believe that there was this huge tide that ended up drowning almost the little motor,
yeah,
and it stopped it from going. And then they just ended up capsizing, so it flew
That's
over.
Scary.
Yeah. So imagine being like in a huge amount of water. Like, what would you do in this situation? You know, like just floating, mm-hmm, and you're literally holding on to that.
Honestly, I don't know what I would do. I am scared of like large bodies of water.
Yeah.
And I've said that before. I'm scared of the ocean. Anything that just has to do with water, especially like that, like tides. When you're in that kind of like environment, that water is so powerful that,
yeah,
it's just scary. Like, you literally can't do anything.
Yeah.
Like, it's creepy. So I don't know what I would have done in that situation.
I probably would panic, guys, because, yeah, I'm not that great of a swimmer. Like, I can doggy paddle at the most, but I can't full-on swim. So, yeah, like, I would just be like, man, we're gonna float here until we find some kind of shore, and then I'll, yeah, attempt it. But like, imagine like in like the ocean and the sea, they're very deep. So like that feeling of not feeling like anything beneath you,
yeah,
and not like
not being able to grab onto anything,
yeah,
is
like,
just terrifying.
It's weird. But continuing on, it would be about a day where they were still hanging onto this boat waiting for help. Rockefeller grew worried that maybe the native guides didn't make it, so he told Renee he thinks he can make it to the shore. So he went ahead and grabbed two empty gasoline cans to help him, and he swam to shore, which was about, I believe, 11 to 12 miles away from where they were, which is quite a, like, you know, a long time for you to be able to swim through,
yeah,
that. It's a lot to do, you know.
It is a lot.
So like, do you think he made it? Would you be able to swim that far, or would you have left the boat? Like, what do you think? You would have just been like, okay, I'm gonna attempt to get us out of this situation.
I think there could be a possibility that he made it because he had those gasoline things, unless he lost them while he was like swimming back. But, you know, thinking that he kept them, if he got tired, he can just rest for a while he's floating,
yeah,
and then keep going. So if he did keep the gasoline things, I feel like he might have made it. But then again, we don't know if he did,
yeah,
or did not keep them, you know.
Well, another thing is, I think his dad ended up stating that he was a really strong swimmer, so he believed that like he did make it through, yeah, somehow, you know, and ended up finding the shore, or ended up, you know, going somewhere, which we'll go into further detail after this. But I honestly like think that like I wouldn't have left the boat, and I would have waited for those two people at least another day, you know. I would have given it 2 days, because I believe like they were saying that it was a pretty, it basically was a day's worth of swimming for them to go back to get help, you know. So like, I would have trusted at least 2 days at the most. And,
yeah,
if 2 days went by, then I'd be like, okay, we gotta do something, right?
Jumping back into it, this was the last time he was seen on the record, but only if Rockefeller and Renee knew that the native guides did in fact make it to the shore and help was on the way. Once the Dutch authorities learned about the incident, they conducted a widespread search for Renee and Rockefeller. As they continued to search the muddy high waters infested with crocodiles, snakes, scorpions, they finally spotted Renee still clinging onto the boat, which was a complete miracle to them. But they noticed that Rockefeller was nowhere to be seen, and Renee was asked a swarm of questions. He then explained to the reporters that he had tried to tell Michael to wait and convince him to stay, but Michael was confident he was able to get help. His last words were, "I think I can make it." The sad thing is, it took a total of 3 days for the news to reach Michael's family that their son was missing.
Honestly, guys, like, for it to take 3 days, that's so scary, you know.
Yeah.
Like, what if within those 3 days, like, somehow, like,
we could have found him?
Yeah, like, as a parent, like, I would have been searching those waters like crazy. Another thing is too, I think they had called, like, the natives ended up calling the land, like, it's basically like a whole land of death.
Yeah.
Because they had like crocodiles, like snakes, scorpions, sharks, and they even said like the sharks weren't known to, like, you know, bite people and stuff,
yeah,
like that, but they had crocodiles. So like, these waters were infested, and like, I would just be scared. Like, that's just, it's totally crazy to me. But Michael's father was asked questions about his whereabouts of his son, and however, as scared as he was, he tried to answer the question in a calm manner, especially like having all the media on him. Like, they wanted to almost see him freak out, you,
yeah,
know. But however, once his father arrived to New Guinea, there was still no trace of Michael. As they continued to search, finally a clue appeared, which was a gasoline can that Michael carried to help him swim, and it was only one of them that they found. And at this point in the search, everyone firmly believed that he drowned. However, some still carried some kind of hope that he was still out there somewhere. So over 5,000 natives joined the search at sea, and after 2 weeks passed, the search ended and still no sign of Michael. And although there were still speculations that Michael might have gone somewhere in the jungle, there was still no solid evidence other than that gas can, assuming that he may have drowned. So I also saw that like a lot of people were like, why did you end the search after 2 weeks? Like, you think if that was your son, you would have continued searching,
yeah,
you know? Like, you think that like maybe his dad lost hope or something.
I feel like maybe he just lost hope and you're like, yeah, he drowned or he's
yeah,
he's
like gone. There's just a lot of like a whole body of water to have to find my son. Like it's really sad, guys. Like honestly, it's a crazy story.
Yeah, guys. Now fast forwarding to over 7 years after his disappearance, a man named Milt, who was an editor of a magazine, met a man named Donahue. He stated that he knows where Rockefeller is and that he has the exact coordinates where he is located, because a few months before he was on the island, he was on an island called Papua. He personally had seen and talked to Michael. Just like any other person would, Milt went ahead and began his search, taking the chances that it could have been a hoax or the truth. And he searched Papua Island and only found an abandoned hut, but no sign of Michael. When he talked to the missionary Cornelius Van Kiesel, he said that he had heard rumors from natives that Michael was killed by a tribe. When Milt met with the chief in charge of the tribe, he spoke to him about the accusations, and he said he would know if they killed Michael because he is a chief, but he believed that other tribes wanted to put the blame on them to get them in trouble, but they never had killed Michael.
I feel like, because, yeah, like, the guy spoke to the chief personally. I think there's also, like, an interview of this on YouTube, because they ended up, you know, like, uncovering footage of this. And he was like, I'm the chief, like, I'm the person in charge, so I'd know for a fact that we killed them. And not only that, there's not a lot of white men around here. So, yeah. Like, if we killed a white man, I'd know if we did, you know? So that's another thing. Like, I don't know necessarily if they killed him, and maybe they did, and they were hiding it. I don't know. This whole, like, story is very, like, mysterious, because it's like, he could have drowned, or he could have been killed. What if he did make it to shore and he ended up coming to this tribe, you know? It's crazy. However, besides this, Milt still continued to search New Guinea for over 2 months to see if he can possibly find any leads or clues where Michael might have gone or what could have happened. He grew to understand on his journey how Michael fell in love with the areas, and after all this time, they still didn't find anything, but he did film his search as well, and he even published a book. But nobody had ever seen this footage until it was uncovered in, I think, 1969 for a documentary. And in the footage, it shows a white man with a beard canoeing with the cannibal tribe. And the man in the footage looks kind of blurry, but certain features you can point out kind of have similar characteristics of Michael. And most importantly, Asmats, you know, the Asmat tribe don't wear beards. So, like, it's kind of a characteristic that would be obvious that it could possibly be Michael.
But overall, this case still has not been solved, but a few theories are still circulating about Michael Rockefeller, starting with the shark theory. People believe maybe he had been attacked by a shark while swimming to shore. However, the natives stated, like we said before, that sharks rarely attack people swimming, and there was no trace of him found in the water, so it was probably very unlikely that this happened. The second theory was the cannibal theory, that he was eaten by one of the tribes in the island. They believe he grew tired of swimming, so when he was spotted by them, he was too restless to fight back. The theory is that they drove a spear through his ribs and an axe to his head. Then they began the Asmat head hunting ritual on him, which, if they did kill them, this is how they assume it would have happened. But lastly, another theory is that he was kidnapped by the tribe and was taken in as a prisoner and possibly died in the prison. However, it was debunked, because when Milt traveled through the island to investigate his disappearance, he found empty huts.
Honestly, it's all interesting, but my personal theory is that what if he was tired of this rich life, right? So he set up this boat with two natives, and they made a plan to figure out a way for him to escape his life. So the boat capsizes, and they wait at night. Then he leaves the boat, leaving behind Renee, and somehow meets up with one of the natives from the tribe, and they take him under their wing and hide him away from the world. He also seemed to have loved their way of living so much that maybe he just kind of like wanted to live that way, and from him coming from one of the most wealthiest family in America, he probably just kind of got tired. And even his father said that Michael is the happiest being with the Asmat culture. And with the picture that was circulating of this, you know, like white man fighting alongside the tribe, it possibly could have been him. And like we said, like he had a beard, so like in that culture they don't have beards, so like it could have been something that, what if it is him, you know? And maybe it's the life that he chose, and I think this theory is a lot more settling. So maybe they kind of like spread the word around that cannibalism was a part of it, because it was something that was believable during that time, and it was enough to stop people from looking for him. So I don't know, I kind of think this would be a better ending than to immediately assume the worst about his story, you know? And like maybe he, like, you know, when the boat, you know, ended up tipping over, he ended up having the natives help him, and they're like, you know what, we'll go plan this, you know, and do this, and then maybe everybody will stop looking for you. But and also another theory I had seen was that maybe the dad did end up finding him, and he was kind of like ashamed that he chose this life over, you know, the wealth, so he ended up paying people like a bunch of money to stop looking for him, and that's why I ended up at 2 weeks.
I agree with you. I feel like maybe it could have been that he was just, like you said, tired of the rich life, and the fact that he, you know, loved the culture and, you know, the environment. Maybe he just wanted to be part of them. And that picture you did show me, it does look, it just looks odd. Like, if they, in that culture, the Azmat culture, they don't wear beards. This guy has a full-on beard, and, like, why are they allowing that if they don't allow that in their culture?
Yeah.
You know, it could have been that, like, he just wanted to be part of their culture. He was tired of all the money and all, you know, the daily stresses of having to deal with businesses and stuff like that. And maybe he just wanted to live a free life like that and, you know, be part of their culture. And that, to me, is a very believable theory.
Yeah. And, like, you know, like, these people, like, he described them as very charismatic, you know, really kind people. So, like, maybe, like, he just had them spread that word of cannibalism and people just automatically believed it, you know, and, like, they assumed the worst about these people. Overall, guys, who knows what really happened, but in the end, the official cause of his death was drowning. He was only 23 years old and was presumed to have died on November 19th, 1961. His disappearance shocked the world. Until this day, there was no official leads other than the red gas tank that they found, which, you know, kind of presumed his death and drowning. So overall, let us know what you guys think. This is kind of a short episode, but this story, you know, like, it was a pretty quick one. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's just so many theories that I'd rather go with the one that has a better, you know, ending to it, right? But as always, let us know what you guys think on any of our social media pages, because we would like to hear your guys' thoughts on this one.
That'll close off today's episode. We want to thank everybody who stayed all the way into the end. Like we said, follow us on our social media pages. But without further ado, we are out.
Peace.